This is Carte Blanche, the podcast. One story every day that matters. Delve into the issues that impact you. Whether you're in need of a better understanding of the world around you or simply seeking inspiration or unique perspectives, you'll find it all here.
He's the face of Build One South Africa, or BOSA, a relatively new party that's garnered a fair amount of attention. Musi Maimane is a well-known political contender who aims to bring new, fresh voices to the local scene. But will voters be able to separate him from his DA legacy? Masa Kekana speaks to Maimane about BOSA's goals and why he believes an Uberized response system is the answer to South Africa's crime problem.
A very good and warm welcome to you. Welcome to Carte Blanche, the podcast. My name, of course, is Masa Kekana. And today I'm excited to be joined by a man that's no stranger to South African politics and now contesting as a leader for his own political party, of course, Build One South Africa with Mr. Musi Maimane. Thank you so much for joining us on the Carte Blanche Elections podcast. It's been a long journey for you. Now we are just days away from a pivotal election come 29 May. Tell us, how are you feeling? Let's just start there.
Yeah, look, I'm feeling good. I'm feeling strong. I've had the privilege of obviously having taken time off parliament and going out to communities to meet South Africans and to share a message of bringing South Africans together, putting a job in every home, and people are hearing us. And so in some ways, your own natural energy runs out and then you need the strength of the divine and the hopes that you see in the eyes of South Africans when you engage them. That gives you the courage to keep going. And so I'm very optimistic and I'm feeling in my own self that this is a very important election and a massive fight. And I love a good fight. So I'm really feeling quite good about this moment.
I'd like to start at the beginning, before we even get to how you got to BOSA. And actually, this is one of the questions I wanted to ask you. Is it BOSA or BOSA?
So BOSA.
It's BOSA. So it's not the private school version of it.
No. Nah.
BOSA. So before we even get to BOSA, which we've seen all over different provinces as Carte Blanche, as you know, we travel to different parts of the country telling investigative stories. And of course, we also see the electioneering, the posters and the visibility of different political parties in different areas. And I was having a chat on this very podcast with politics editor at EWN, Sidi Madia, and you were saying that the newer parties, you even seeing them in the most remote villages, the posters all over the show. You've kind of imprinted yourself everywhere. But starting at the beginning, you've just published a book now. I think very long overdue. Some may even say too long overdue. It was expected when you left the Democratic Alliance. Tell us a little bit about the book and the timing of the book during an election year.
When I left the DA in 2019, I kind of took time aside because it was indeed a very, very difficult period in my life. And any leader would tell you that in a journey, you have some victories and you have some defeats. And you need moments where, when your life is invested in a project, those moments become personal. Politics for me has never been about a career. I have effectively given my life to it. And so my family is engaged, my children are engaged. And so when you suffer losses, it becomes personal. So I had to take some time out just to almost in some ways work that out and be able to write something that I thought wasn't just about the DA. There were many people who wanted me to write a tell all, as if when you get divorced, suddenly you must write about your ex or whatever the case might be. I didn't want that. I didn't believe that it is befitting of someone who wants to serve this nation to be in some ways in that mold. And so I took time to also figure out, the book is in almost in three parts. The first part was, let me tell you who I am. Not the who I am you've seen on television or you've seen with a DA lens, But let me tell you what growing up in Soweto is like. Let me tell you what being in a mixed marriage looks like and feels like sometimes. Let me tell you a little bit about my own faith. Let me tell you about my primary school experience. Let's talk about why I care about education. And then, of course, you can't deny that there's a dynamic about the DA and Parliament and the ANC. And in another day, I could have published an extract about how I feel liberation parties become parties that quickly can oppress the same citizens they claim to have freed. And then I wanted to wrap up the book with a sense of what does tomorrow look like for South Africa? And so I spend the last third of the book focused almost exclusively on what geopolitics must look like. What is the future of this country? And the last chapter is called Dinaledi, a nation of superstars, and why we've got to build a country of superstars. So the temptation would have been to make it exclusively about the DA, in which instance it should have been out 2 years ago. But because I wanted to make it fuller and I wanted to make it a sense upon which the first half or part one of the political journey is done, let's write the next chapter after the 29th of May. So to bring it out now, I think, you know, when you're in an election year and people are talking about politics, a political book must come out at that time. So I thought it was important to bring it out in this year, in an election year where people are asking questions. And the one question that I've been asked a lot on the campaign trail is to say, why did you leave the DA? Because given the times that we live in, we needed to answer that question. So yeah, but the book isn't about the DA. The DA is a part of it, not the only part of it.
I'm glad you clarified that, because it may have seemed like it's just about the DA, but there's more to you, obviously. And you've left the DA like 5 years ago already. But would you say, Musi, you've been able to shake off, because you were saying that sometimes people see things or you through a DA lens. Now, you were quite prominent in the DA, and that's obviously why people would still see blue when they see you. How difficult has it been for you to shake off that blue? And do you think it's been shaken off completely?
Look, part of the work that we've always had to do, I think in some ways, when you are inside the DA, your voice can become muzzled to a point where you've got to keep to quote unquote party line. And there were obviously some dichotomies that I had to face up with. I mean, I remember one incident, for example, where I thought to myself, this is a clear injustice. I remember the debate when, you remember there was that Black Monday where farmers were going around, some of them brandishing the old apartheid flag. And it was the most offensive thing. And that to speak about it, people, you start to have political considerations that say you want to keep farmers voting for the DA, all of those types of debates. So having come out, I felt a lot freer. I felt a lot more to fight for my own convictions. So to your question about whether you can shake it off, I think there'll still be some people who think of me in one way. And the exercise wasn't just to shake off what the DA, because like I acknowledge in the book, I served inside the DA. You can't take that away completely. It's not like erasing that part of your life. It taught me something. It gave me opportunities. And therefore, you know, well, that didn't go as well as I thought, and therefore the whole thing is a complete disaster. No, it's not. Because I've always, even inside the DA, fought for building one South Africa. And so even when you take away that brand and you now own it, no one in the DA has fought me about it. People in the DA have said, no, you want to go build one South Africa, go do it. And part of the reason I left, to sum it up, would be to say there was a contestation of a vision for all South Africans versus a vision for minorities. And I think the DA is stuck in the fight back mode. And it's now harking back to that in a very aggressive manner, whereas we needed to come back into the center and build. So to say branding-wise, have you changed all of it? I think it's a journey. It's a journey of finding your own voice. And I'm comfortable enough that South Africans are starting to go. I hear this a lot. People say to me, we voted for the DA because of you, but we never could trust the DA fully. We're grateful you are on BOSA. And therefore, naturally, we feel comfortable now to fully get behind you because we realize your project has been about all of us, Black, white, Indian, and colored, rather than just simply narrowly what I think the DA has got stuck into. And equally so, I also think that the ANC or the EFF have become stuck into almost, if you like, ethnic mobilization and the sense upon which parties represent particular races. So I think we uniquely come at a point where we can say, could all South Africans work together under one body or under one political formation to advance shared interests?
The formation of BOSA, was it a moment where you had a conversation with perhaps Natalie, your wife, or maybe colleagues or friends where you thought, I'm actually going to do this. I'm going to contest. I'm going to start a new party by myself.
Well, there are moments that build up to things, right? So when I left, you'll remember I said, look, guys, I'm not interested in formulating another political party. At the time, this was in just after 2020, so we headed straight into COVID. And then we built One South Africa, the One South Africa movement. I wanted a community-based organization, and we went out. And during COVID, I'm grateful to say we're able to raise enough resources to put up just over 1.3 million meals across the country when South Africans were fighting COVID. We were there working in communities. And so that was a privileged time. And then in the 2021 elections, we started to work with, after having won the Constitutional Court judgment that then said, let us amend the Electoral Amendment Bill so that independents can come through. So in 2021, we worked with a number of independents and made submissions into law about that. The moment that came to formulate BOSA, the political party, was when we realized that Parliament A was refusing to be held accountable to the people. They drafted a law that, in fact, was just malicious compliance with the Constitution. And then I was speaking to South Africans and saying to them, well, if you want an independent candidate to stand nationally, if they get 90,000 votes, they only get that seat. And actually, when a party gets 90,000 or 100,000 votes, they get two seats. So the dividend and the promise within a party is far better than that of someone standing independently. So I fought for that. And then we sat together with a number of South Africans, Bontate Kusta Jack, Nobuntu Tlhazo Webster, Michael Louis, so many who came together. And naturally, like anything, I'm a person of faith. So prayerfully, we considered it. We considered the implications of the thing. And then taking One South Africa movement, we said, how do we transition it and put on Build One South Africa, the political party with a vision for all South Africans? And in less than 2 years now, it's been one of the fastest growing parties in the country. To your point, we've been able to reach all corners of communities. And to be fair, we weren't just starting from zero. All the people who worked with us in One South Africa came on board and said, we share the vision, we share the values, we want to work with you. So it's been a transitioning program as we go forward. And I'm excited about it because we've been able to achieve a sense where people say, unlike other parties, this is not a fiefdom for a few people. This is community driven. Our candidates come from communities. There are people I only met when we were introducing them as candidates to the South African public. I said, oh, you? And it's been a home that's attracted unbelievable talent. Because when you just typically start a political party, then politicians who come from other parties join you first. Then you can either become a sub-branch of the party you've come from. No one can deny that some parties are just formulations of the DA. Some parties are just formulation of the ANC with leaders who come from those parties. We've opened the door deliberately. And now you get people like Ayanda Ali, who comes from media and that kind of platform. You get people like Kathy Berman, who is herself just come from Black Sash and various places. You had people like Kusta Jack, who came from the ANC in that sense. You had people who come from not only business, I mean, the deputy leader of the organization who we started with, Nobuntu Tlhazo Webster. Here she is. She comes from business in that sense. And so here's someone who didn't come into politics, but came from actually a sense of activism. So we are seeing talent of South Africans being able to be given a political vehicle. And it's true to the dictum that politics is so important, it can't be left up to politicians. So I'm excited because we've got unbelievable talent. It's one of the best caucuses. And it's worked out because we gave power truly back to the people.
A lot of people are reluctant when it comes to new parties. You may sound right. You may be saying the right things as well, things that people want to hear. But there's a trust deficit between leaders and ordinary citizens, especially when it comes to new parties. You have a track record because you come from another party, which could be a pro and a con. What do you say to the critics who say that these smaller parties are not going to make it?
There's an old famous saying that says, at first you're a movement and then you become a monument. Now, parties, for example, like the ANC have become a monument of corruption. That's why they can't campaign with new people. They invite ancestors to come and campaign for them. You get parties like the DA who would make the same case. And that's why there's no fresh ideas, no energy for the future. I often say to voters, this election is about old versus new. It's actually about the lack of new ideas. It's actually because the lack of a way of saying, how do we fix this country for its future? Today, you and I are talking here on a virtual platform. Many of the leaders that I'm seeing campaigning here lived in a time when none of that existed. Surely now the economy has to change into a digital environment. So for me, I don't see it as big versus small. I see it as old versus new. And I want to invite a new generation of leaders to say, how do we take this country forward? Therefore, when we come to an election day, there will be a coalition government. The question that people must ask is, who do you want in the room to represent your interests against the old way of doing things? That's the question. Because when someone is sitting at home going, well, the ANC is going to get 45%, for them to govern, they need another 7%. Therefore, who is going to be that 7%? If you want a party that's forward-thinking, that's all of that, to be fighting for those issues, that's what you vote for. Because actually, that's the most power. The contestation in this country, in my frame, is a debate between myself and Julius, who both had political experience, but hold different values. So to your point, is it new or is it anything? I bring with me an experience of having succeeded, having faced difficulties, but I've also went to learn. I've been involved in business. I'm completing a PhD. And so I've had to come in. I'm coming back into the political frame saying the debate for the future of this country is going to be between myself and Julius. Who is going to bring the balance of forces? The DA can have its own MPC, etc., and parties will fall in line into that. The center ground is being contested for. Therefore, in a government that is going to be a coalition government, who do you want in the room? You are going to have Cyril, we know that. You are going to have John, we know that. You are going to have Julius, we know that. Who else do you want? And I'm saying, put me in the room so that I can fight for the things of South Africans who care about a multiracial society, an economy that is just and includes all South Africans, a place where we can have growth and a future-looking leadership. So if you want that, that's what you vote for. And this election, really, I'm asking South Africans to give birth to the new South Africa. Because under the ANC, whilst we started a journey, we are starting to hark back and make regression. It's the same for the DA. That's why they are both suffering. Isn't it anomalous that the government is suffering and the official opposition is suffering? They are suffering because they represent the old. What is growing in this country is the new. And so elections, as former President Bill Clinton once said, are a referendum on the future. They are not thinking of ancestors or your past. They are really about the future. And so I'm asking, if you want a future in this country, vote for Bosa, because we represent the future. But if people are wanting to get stuck in the past, then the only questions they have to answer is whether they stay at home or don't come at all, or go vote for the past. And whereas I'm saying, actually, let's build the future. Let's do it. And I'm inviting new voters. I'm inviting voters who are disillusioned. I'm inviting voters who are tired of the political order. I'm saying to them, come, this is the moment. And it's not 1994. It is 2024, which means along with ChatGPT, along with all the innovation, we can modernize politics and modernize South Africa for all the people in this country. And so let's do it.
What is it about Bosa, the things that stand out, that confused voter that you would say? For instance, I know your tagline, a job in every household. How do you achieve that? You've been very vocal when it comes to education as well. How are you going to plan to achieve those things that you're promising as well? And just, you know, three more other points that Bosa is proposing.
We've tabled a 10-point plan, and maybe that would be a good place to start, is to say, when we say a job in every home, we're discussing 2 million jobs. And to achieve 2 million jobs, you've got to have, I think about it as a garden. You know, gardens need the best conditions, and they need plants that go in there. So let's talk about the conditions of our economy. And these are issues such as making sure that we fix Eskom. And I've proposed SMRs, which are small modular reactors that keep a baseload on the table, so that we don't fear load shedding. We must not have load shedding in this country. We can fix it. This is not a new problem in the world. The world, we've worked out how to create sustainable energy, and we can transition from fossil energy to ultimately sustainable energy. And there is a pathway not only keeping baseload on the table, but being able to partner with SADC countries to use gas, hydro, and ultimately to use wind technology. Secondly, we must fix the logistics. So making sure Transnet goods can move in and out, and that's about splitting Transnet. And then along with that is making sure people can move. So that's passenger rail, so that people are not expending too much money moving from one place to another, especially to places of work. You are correct. I've thought about education because I think if we're not careful, we're going to introduce Bantu education, which will only be applicable to people who are poor. Because if you're asking people to pass at 30%, you are literally confining them to unemployment. We know that of the 2/3 of young people who are unemployed, 90% of them don't have a matric. So there's a clear correlation between unemployment, unemployability, and having a sub-matric education. So we've got to fix for getting young people through school. We've got to ensure that they are passing at 50%, and we've got to help them with mathematics. And my proposal there is to put vouchers to parents so that they can be able to choose what is the best way for them, which school do they want to go to, and ultimately ensure that even in the first 1,000 days of a child, we start to look after the child in the womb and the one that's been born in the first 1,000 days, because a child born hungry can potentially be malnourished or face stunting. And therefore, when you do that, you limit the economic potential. The fourth is about, let's keep our communities safe. No one is going to invest in a crime-infested country. And I've made a proposal about devolving police powers, bringing them locally, adding private security so that it becomes one force, and using intelligence to lock up criminals. Fifth, we wanted to be very clear on this issue to say that we've got to build infrastructure, and that is digital infrastructure, so that all of us don't become internet strangers, but we can all be participants in the internet. And when you achieve that, it means that in township economies, you can put actually business processing centers. You can ensure that there's an economy that comes from the township. And then lastly, let's keep citizens healthy. Healthy citizens contribute to the economy. That's why health access must be broadened to include everybody in the country. I don't agree with NHI. I think that they can.
In fact, you've called the NHI a death sentence.
Of course it is. One, it is shown the fact that here's a government that's mismanaged everything. And it shows the fact that what you are going to do is have skills flight of your doctors. And lastly, why do you limit choice of people? I believe in a hybrid model. Give people the choice. So you are going to overburden health facilities. And if you don't learn anything from countries like have had failed or collapsing health sentences, you end up with their leaders dying elsewhere. Look at Zimbabwe. Mugabe died in a foreign country. So NHI is not, in the way that it's been conceived at the moment, it's not going to work. We need a hybrid model. And also, not only dealing with treatment dynamics of people, but it also requires us to keep citizens healthy. And that's about the kind of diets you put in school. That's about the sort of work that you do around eradicating of poverty. That's an economic issue so that people are healthier and can exercise choices. So it's both preventative and the work of treatment. And I believe in a hybrid model, when citizens, if you are in Limpopo and you can't go to a hospital, you can equally go to a private doctor close by you, and the state will be an underwriter of that. But if you are a medical aid holder and you want to see the best hepatologist, they're actually at Grooteskier Hospital, and that's a public hospital. You can go there and someone can give you treatment, and your medical aid must reimburse the state. So I think there's a hybrid model that can be workable. But once you've done all of those things, let's plant the right things. Let's ensure that manufacturing is re-stimulated in this country, because you and I use a kettle and we use a microwave, but we only make 4% of them in the country. Can we not increase our ability to produce those so that we can create a new economy on manufacturing? Why don't we stimulate agriculture? That's a job driver. It says so in the National Development Plan. And between 5 to 6% growth can be achieved if you are able to keep the lights on, make sure there's digital infrastructure, but help your farmers be able to create more work. Thirdly, how do we stimulate sectors like tourism so that electronic visas are being able to be achieved quicker and easier? I have proposed in our budget a 220 billion rands investment into the township economy so that townships become special economic zones, so that we don't just achieve a job in every home, but a job closer to home. Because the benefit I give my kids is that I'm closer to their schools, closer to home when I work, and therefore it means that when the family stays together, your kids stay in school, they're able to get the kind of security that you need. And lastly, I do think when we create a national civilian service where we can give young people a one-year program where they can intern 6 months and work for the next 6 months. We can pay them for the whole year, but we create a national civilian service for young people to work. So to me, you asked about coalitions. Let's take the 10-point plan. That's the only negotiating thing we put on the table. The last thing we need is to form a coalition that removes the ANC, but we govern worse than the ANC. Let's form a grand coalition of the opposition predicated on that 10-point plan, on shared values, and appoint ethical leaders who will eradicate corruption.
So in removing the ANC as the governing party and coalition, would you be then willing to work with your former lover, the DA?
The DA will bring with it 18 to 20% of the votes. No grand coalition of the opposition can be formulated without the DA. So however, the DA may not be what I think it should have been and what we hoped it could have been, it still has 18% of the support in this country. So anyone must engage that, challenge them on the plan and see what we can do. I also think a grand coalition of the opposition doesn't mean all parties merge, right? What it also means is that you can have parties that say, look, we're not going to join the grand coalition, but what we are going to do is give you votes when you need them. When you want to elect a speaker, we'll give you the votes. Elect a president, we'll give you the votes. Or pass the budget, we'll give you the votes. So I think there are ways of formulating coalitions that can work and will keep them stable. I worked with coalitions from 2016 to 2019. They never fell apart because I was able to speak to the leaders and build shared consensus, whether it was Freedom Front Plus, ACDP, UDM, COPE, all of them. I worked with them and said, here's what we are committed to doing.
You've been criticized a lot when it comes to your stance on Israel and Palestine. What is your stance? And also I want to add to that, that you mentioned your head of communications, Ayanda Ali, phenomenal woman, great activist who's been doing great stuff in Soweto and Dobsonville for many, many years. But she also came online to apologize for her demeanor, her posture, her wording when it came to a UCT political debate when the issue of Israel and Palestine came up. Is this your guy's Achilles heel?
You know, it will be an Achilles heel for anyone who wants to work with all South Africans, right? Because in Bosa, you've got Muslim South Africans, you've got Jewish South Africans. And to harmonize the two views is often hard in a fairly highly conflictual area. If you want to work with both blacks and whites, you've got to realize that the hopes of one are the fears of another. Our stance on this issue has been the stance of the South African government and our foreign policy, actually, which is that we believe in a two-state solution. We believe that there are, in the heinousness of the crime of apartheid, we were able to find a negotiated settlement that delivered a South Africa where old sworn enemies could coexist. Now, why can't we find a negotiated way even in the Middle Eastern crisis? How do we still, as difficult as it is, we have to pursue a two-state solution where the state of Israel can exist and the state of Palestine can exist? We can furthermore fight harder for making sure that there's a ceasefire where hostages from either end are returned, that all of us as a global community don't want to see an increasing of violence and people being killed, innocent civilians. And we want for ultimately that when you talk about issues of terror like Hamas, etc., those matters must be dealt with. And I think even the UAE, countries like Egypt, fairly are engaged with the subject. So for me, that's our stance. And it's always been our stance and it's been consistent. Now, for me, that's for us, we can unite South Africans on that basis. And of course, there'll be other South Africans that say, no, I'm either pro-Israel and others who say I'm pro-Palestine. We mustn't synonymize also Hamas and Palestine. Those two things are not the same. I've been to the region. So what I think we need to do is allow ourselves the space to say, as we journey forward in this, are the two-state solution people, the people who say actually there can be a peaceful resolution to this issue, they will work with Bosa. Those who say they are pro either one end of the issue, those people sometimes I find will be critical of us and will be critical on both sides. But I think the global community where we sit has always advanced that view and has always wanted to see that view come to pass.
Coming back home, you've mentioned a lot of things that Bosa is proposing, but also there are other key factors that have been brought to the fore during these elections again. And those two I'd like you to talk on, one being crime, the other one being the borders. With the crime aspect, for instance, when we spoke to Ntate Mashava on this podcast, he mentioned what sounded like penal colonies, where basically prisoners should go off to some remote place. They should build their own prisons. They should farm their own food, and they shouldn't be supported by the state. And his reasoning was that these people are clothed and fed while we have innocent civilians who are living in squalor, who can't even go and get the same education opportunity that you can if you were in a prison. What does Bosa propose when it comes to a high crime level?
I mean, I don't want to always stand up with populists who say things that are clearly impracticable, and let alone any that are simplistic solutions to very complicated issues. It tells you their readiness to govern in this regard. I think let's look at for numbers, because South Africa's crime levels began to decrease leading up to 2010. So 2008, 2009, we had a decrease in crime level. Why? We did a few things correctly. We invested in policing, we increased the force, and we made sure that detectives prioritized murder. You started to see a decline in that. Now, why do we need to do in 2024, in a country where 75 South Africans are being murdered daily, there are a couple of key things that we've got to do. The first is we've got to devolve policing and have a combination of what is regional policing and national policing. At this point, we've only got national police. And the net effect or net consequence of having just national police means that essentially you end up in a space where intelligence doesn't sit closer to the ground. The eradication of crime is not the nature of the punitive action that takes place. It is the perception you are going to get arrested. And at this point in time, criminals are walking around freely. So let's regionalize policing, add metro policing. You and I drive around Johannesburg. The metro police go out and they ask us for our discs and our license discs. Really, that's not the priority at the moment. The priority must be murder. Let's add them into the regionalized policing and then create a civilian volunteer service where more young people can be put into policing and training, and then merge those with private security so that you have an Uberized response system. What I mean by that is if you and I are feeling in danger of a crime, we dial the 10111 or we create an emergency panic thing, and the closest vehicle, whether private or public, must be arriving on site to arrest the criminals. Because when we do that, there's a sense upon which criminals can feel, wait, hang on, I'm not free to do as I please. Furthermore, you increase the eyeballs that are looking in communities to make sure you can see who the crooks are. And ultimately, because we know South Africa isn't giving birth to new criminals every day, it's the same criminals committing the same crime. Their intelligence can arrest them, which means that when you go to court, you can produce better evidence. You reduce the amount of time detectives are investigating everything rather than actually just investigating murder. Detectives at this point, you speak to another detective, they'll tell you, I'm dealing with murder, motor vehicle accident, gender-based violence, petty theft, all of these things. Now, we must help our police focus on murder. We must ultimately ensure that we give proper facilities to police stations. That's why we regionalize them, so that ultimately you can have better vehicles, better training, better response mechanisms amongst police stations. Because you go to any police station right now, the lights are off because the government is objecting to our case where we said police stations must have solar panels being used there so that there's never power off in a police station. And when you get there, the infrastructure is bad and police are not proud to be working within that space. Let's fix that. Because what you then do, you strengthen the police force, you make them prioritize certain things, you arrest people for petty crime, you have bigger responses, and then you take a strong stance against crime. Once we're done with doing that work, partnering with a criminal justice system that is properly funded, we can ensure that actually bad actors end up behind bars.
So in this aspect, you agree with the DA, because they'd also like policing not to be centralized anymore, not to rest with national.
I think there's a combination. The DA wants exclusive. I'm not sure. I'm not going to talk about their policy. I wasn't part of drafting it, but we want a combination. Like in any government, like if you went to the US, you have a federal police and you have the New York Police Department. Both of those things have different competencies because there is cross-border crime that occurs. You need national police to be able to deal with that. But you also need specialized regional police that can focus on certain crimes in a particular region. Because if you are in the Western Cape, you are dealing with gang violence. If you are in Gauteng, you are dealing with different types of crime that occur. So you need specialization of either one of those things and an aggregation that then ultimately eradicates what the old way of looking at policing, which was to keep police who were trying to keep certain communities away from others. What we can now do is use intelligence, digital infrastructure to really fight crime.
This is the old versus the new that you were referring to, I guess, earlier.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about the borders. Borders have become such a big, big contestation issue because we've got the Patriotic Alliance, Gates and McKinsey on a daily basis saying, Mabahambe on Spizani, we are going to do a mass deportation of all illegal foreigners. Action is also saying deport all illegal foreigners. What is BOSA's stance when it comes to our borders?
You know, I'm always cautious when I hear populists, because for once, I never know how. If you want to put people in buses, tell me, how do you identify them and which police force are you going to use for that? Because you have to then ask police to be able to verify between what is a legal ID, what is not. We've had these problems when you arrive in communities, suddenly people are asking people to count in a different language so as to decide for themselves who comes from where. So you carry on like this, especially for these parties, you are going to end up before a matter of times. I lived in Dobsonville. There were floods that took place in Alex. And because of all of these campaigns, people used to say, no, when the government said, we're going to move people from Streeta where there was flooding to Dobsonville, people said, hi, they must also all go. You can create that within your own country. So for me, when we think about immigration, let's not throw away human rights with it. The first starting point is, of course, you've got to secure your borders. I can't go into any country without proper documentation. Let's make sure that's possible. Let's make sure we can legalize, give people a pathway to a legal entry. If you're asylum seeking, you are refugee seeking, we've only got 7 Home Affairs centers upon which you can apply. Let's expand those so that we give people a pathway to legalization. Why? Because we are part of the international law and South Africa is bound by those. If I want to move to Botswana or I want to move to England or I want to move wherever, there is a pathway for me to be able to do that so that I can be legalized or they can reject me, which is also an option. Because what you then do is you look at what is called a circular form of immigration. People who come into South Africa, they come so they may be seeking work opportunities, they may be doing whatever. The reality is if you legalize them and you give them visas for time periods, they can either come in or go out and they don't have to feel they're already breaking a law. And this issue mustn't just be applicable to SADC countries. It must be applicable to everybody because the same people as Paisani and whatever walk by Kems Bay, walk by everywhere where you've got Russians, you've got Americans, but no one is asking questions about those people. So clearly this matter must only be targeted at Africans. And because we are in a SADC environment, we need SADC interventions. And I want to say this point without equivocation. We had an immigration problem just after 2007 when the ANC went to Robert Mugabe after he lost an election and said, we're going to form a government of national unity. How do you do that when people have lost an election? And so you then worry. Part of the conditions was that, look, we'll make it easier for people to gain access into South Africa. And that began a journey where you had an influx of Zimbabweans who clearly had voted for change and couldn't achieve it coming into South Africa. Let us go and deal with these dictators where they are. You can't allow Mnangagwa to be killing his own people in the own country and hope you're not going to have an immigration crisis. If you have water coming into your house, you don't just first pick up a mop. You go find a tap and close the tap. Let's go there and make sure that we deal with Zimbabwe. When elections were being rigged in Malawi, South Africa was silent. When Edgar Lungu was oppressing people in Zambia, South Africa was silent. Even in the Mnangagwa issue, we were one of 3 countries that attended his inauguration after people said those elections were not free and fair. So let us be upholding of human rights. So we need sensible behavior when it comes to immigration, because it's only a matter of time. You saw South Africans were voting everywhere else in the world. Do you think countries like the UK, Australia, even Kenya, where there are South Africans there, should they also take a stance that says, we're going to go out and find South Africans and put them in buses and send them back? It's insanity. And it's part of a populist rise all over the world where people are starting to blame problems of their country on immigrants. If I took out every immigrant in this country, every single one of them, the problems of South Africa will continue. So let's get a new government. Let's formulate immigration processes
and also make sure anyone who arrives in this country, when you legalize them, they must integrate into South African law, South African customs, and South African's way of doing things. I don't want in Hillbrow for there to be a little Lagos where people can say, no, here is a community for Nigerians or Somalians, whatever the case might be. That would be mad. If you want to come and live in South Africa, you will learn South African languages, you will learn South African laws, and you will conduct yourself in a manner that this country upholds its values. You can't come here and say, I'm going to practice, for example, Sharia law, or this law from this country or this place, and say, yeah, in this country, in my country, they treat women this way, I'm going to do the same in South Africa. That is not how we do things here. You will not be allowed to stay in this country.
I think the major difference is that this is not just about migration or South African foreigners in other countries or foreigners in South Africa, but illegal. So there are processes to seek asylum in this country. There are processes to become naturalized, to become a citizen. But those processes are also sometimes avoided by some people and not all.
No, but let me correct that point, because I hear what you're saying. But how do you have 7 centers facing the crisis that you have? Of course, we've got processes for people to be legalized, but people can't access those or utilize them. You yourself, you're a South African. Go and apply for a passport. See how long it takes. Or go to anywhere else. I speak to many South Africans who can't even get IDs for their children. So we must recognize that there's a state that has capacity that is not maximized or not being well used. Therefore, it encourages illegality. That's what I'm trying to say. And yes, I agree, illegal immigration is not something we want. But let us help people become legal. Securing borders is not the debate. That must be done. No one should disagree on that issue. No country can operate without secure borders. No country can do that. And so let us go. And because we destroyed the army, the NC destroyed the army. They did it. They underfunded it. If you go to our military operations, they're about the worst you can ever see. Because they did that. Now we have porous borders. And I don't disagree with anyone who says securing our borders must be the thing. This border management agency is woefully limited. Even the ANC recognizes this issue. But because they are so useless at implementing anything, they can't actually fund it properly and make sure it's well capacitated to fund. But again, we don't all have to use physical borders like as if we're archaic. There are things like drone technology. There's now laser technology that we can look at and make sure borders are secure. So use what's available to you and be futuristic. And also, when I say be quick to adjudicate visas, because what that helps is that there are people who want to come and trade in South Africa. We are going into a continent of 1.4 billion people. If we just take a simple stance that says, well, Africans here can't come in, we are going to limit our own tourism. Why are Nigerians drinking French wine instead of coming to South Africa to drink wine? We've got to think about the future, not be held back in the past.
I do want to end it off. 29th of May, people should vote for Bosa because?
Because the people who they've nominated to come and represent them in parliament are their people. They must vote for Bosa because actually we want to preserve the new South African dream of a multiracial society. They must vote for Bosa because when we talk about building one South Africa, it isn't just a kumbaya moment of us holding hands as a country, but it is an economic offer that says that we can deliver a job in every home. They must vote for Bosa because having served both in parliament, in business, in civil society, I bring with me a set of experience that accumulates all of those and some experience to go forward. I hear when people say you need fresh and you need new. But you need some experience to be able to steer this country, having learned its successes and its failures. And all I'm asking people to do is we mustn't be feared or step into fear of saying, well, if we let go of the old, there'll be chaos. I want to invite people for their hopes and their dreams, where actually a multi-party government will ultimately never capture the state. Don't fear new. Invest in it, for it represents your hopes. And as President Mandela said, he said, let us not vote for our fears. Let's vote for our hopes. And I want for South Africans to say, Bosa is that alternative for them. The ANC will come and go. It will die. May your votes represent the dreams of your children so that your children one day will be proud of you for having had the courage to go for new. Because one day we may all regret sticking with the old when the lights are off, the water isn't flowing, and ultimately we are wondering why criminals are running free. Now is the time to reset that. And I'm inviting people to come out, vote for Bosa. We are that party. We've got the experience. We've got the leadership.
We got the candidates and a vision and a plan for this country that if we put together, this country within the next 5 years will be a different nation that prospers for all of us.
Barbosa Kimang. Thank you so much, Muthi. We really, really appreciate it. Good luck to you for the 29th of May, and we will see you at the Results Operating Center.
Ngena mapozi.
Have a good one.
Thanks, eh?
Be sure to follow Carte Blanche, the podcast, to ensure you don't miss any of our election coverage in the weeks to come. And if you have a story to share with our team, why not head on over to the Carte Blanche website and let us know using the Tip Us Off page.